FCO, entity 02-12, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody. Chris Jordan here, host of the Talking Sound podcast, coming to you from the studio in Austin, Texas. It has been a long time. We took about a year off from things. Just had a great appearance out at our beloved Comic Palooza in Houston, Texas. We go out there with HC Universal Network every year and sit in on panels and talk about the art of podcasting, and podcast networking is the topic that we had this last year. And while I was there, I had a chance to catch up with my friend, Jared McClellan. He is the host of High Hungry I'm Dad, a very popular show out there. And I wanted to chat with him about content creation and how you go about, I guess, really honing your audience as well as honing content specifically for your audience. So, welcome to the show, Jared. How are you doing?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate the invite.
Absolutely.
Let me come on and talk to you and your audience. And yeah, we're going to have a good time. Good episode.
Absolutely. I've known you for a few years now, and I guess one of the first times we met was actually at Comic Palooza. We ended up being on a panel together, my network and the
that
network that you were with. Then we ended up speaking at a podcast conference together. We've been on numerous panels together since. And I really love a lot of what you have to say about the concept of podcasting and what it's used for, what it's about. Let everybody know real quick how you came into the world of podcasting. How was it that you came to starting your show, everything else?
Yeah, sure. So I started my show, High Hungry I'm Dad, in August of 2016. So I've been doing it for a few years. I know that there's a lot of people out there with more experience than me, but I mean, I kind of make up for it because I have run multiple shows. I've done High Hungry I'm Dad. I've done The Mundane and the Arcane, which is a D&D live play podcast. I've done Spoop Squad, which we watch terrible horror movies. I've done The Three Musketeers, which is a podcast that I did with my sisters, specifically about Disney. And I've had several concepts that didn't necessarily pan out and actually see airtime, but I do have one in the works that is an audio drama. So I'm kind of all over the place, and I have some experience with podcasting and producing podcasts and making your sound as good as you possibly can. I'm not perfect. Nobody is, but I do what I can. And one of the things that I strive to do is make your audio as listenable as possible. And I think I do that. I've had multiple people tell me on a daily basis that my podcast sounds better than professional podcasts that are done by like major production companies with celebrities and stuff. So I really appreciate those comments because I put a lot of time and effort into doing that.
And that is an absolutely integral part of it. Because I'm an audio.
Just as much as the content.
Oh, I highly agree. Now, granted, there are many out there, and like you said, many very large podcasts where the audio is not fantastic, and it really, really surprises me because it's not like they don't have budget. And it's not like those aren't easy treatments to make. It's not even necessarily what's funny is that they spend the time highly editing and curating the episode, but they don't go through and treat the audio imperfections. And it's like, wow,
right,
that's interesting to me. But it's also one of those, I guess, that is a prime and key example of knowing your audience. My wife doesn't necessarily care about such things. She is more concerned about the conversation than she is about the amazing audio quality. That is,
I mean,
to me, it's one of the first things my brain cues into But for her, it's one of the last things.
Right. And I think it really does depend on the audience, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But I think primarily what you're going to see is most people care about it more than they think they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like this show is a prime example. My wife at one point asked me why I couldn't just let something go. And I'm like, my show is about audio and video. I can't just let that go. Like I would get destroyed in the comment box.
Yeah, you would. I mean, if you have a show that's specifically dedicated to that audience and you come out with an episode that sounds like a coffee can,
it's
not going to be great.
Yeah.
You're going to lose a lot of the credibility that you've already built into your show.
Well,
instantaneously.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. It's one of those, knowing my audience. Another decent example is I just had a conversation with a guy who brings people to my shows. And just like a guest booking agent, basically. And he asked me if I wanted a magician on. I was like, I guess that's a cool conversation, but we aren't really like a video show in that way.
Right.
Like most of our distribution and most of our listens come from audio platforms. So I don't know that a magician would necessarily translate to audio. You know, and that was a tough call to make because he was pretty decently known, things like that. But it's like, would my audience sit through that if that's what he's trying to do, is actively do live magic on the show, you know?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, of course, as a podcaster, and no matter how big you are, whether you have one listen per month or you have a million listens per month, it doesn't matter. You always want the guest who's going to come on and bring an audience. But at the same time, just like we were talking about, you have to know your audience. Your audience has to want that type of content, right? So, you can probably bring on an author, but if you know that your audience isn't necessarily book fans, then it might not be the best guest, as opposed to maybe, you know, your audience is more inclined to YouTube creators or, you know, TikTok influencers or whatever it may be. It definitely helps to know your audience and your demographics.
And now, how did you, I guess, not just with Hi Hungry I'm Dad, but also with your other specific niche audience shows, how did you go about building and curating that audience to begin with, Jared?
So, I mean, as much as you can, you have to niche down your podcast so your demographic is kind of built into what your show really is. Hi Hungry, I'm Dad is specifically about just cheesy dad jokes. I mean, it's in the name, right? So people are going to know going in, okay, this is a comedic kind of take on being a dad. You're probably going to get a lot of dad jokes. With The Three Musketeers, the one about Disney, people know that, you know, being a fan of Disney, you're considering yourself a Mouseketeer, so you bring that demographic in automatically. With Spook Squad, that one, the name is a little bit different, but you build the value by giving your audience something. So what we did with that one is we watched terrible screaming horror movies that were rated 6.0 and below on IMDb, and we found the diamonds in the rough. So stuff that we knew people would go and enjoy, but you might not just stumble upon it yourself. So we always just scroll through just terrible horror movies and just found what's good. And we found so many good, like, cult movies that we hear about now before that people were even talking about. Not saying that we created that cult following, because we most definitely did not, but, it's funny to watch a movie, talk about it, and then like a year later, you see that this movie is now has a cult following.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting to do that kind of stuff. So, Your niche should be built in to your podcast. It shouldn't be so broad that anybody can just kind of come in and take just a little bit from it. Like, you want it niched down so much that you're going to know you're Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it getting to the point of, and that can take a little while to find. I mean, even sharply honing a show can take a little while. I had pretty good success with my previous incarnation of my other show, and come to find out through a rebrand and a proper relabeling, we grew by leaps and bounds and have much better guests than what we had previously. But that was also highly curated, and we started letting people know like 9 months out before the actual rebrand happened that this is happening. Like, we talked about it at the end of every episode that this is going to be happening. So it was knowing my audience and knowing the fact of not everybody tunes in every week, you know. People come, people go, people have lives. Sure, you have diehard fans, but most of the time you've got somebody for about three quarters of an episode while they're sitting in traffic, you know, something like that. So you really do have to take advantage of that and use it properly, and use your audience properly.
Right. I'm glad you kind of talked about the like changing of name and maybe even changing of content, because with High Hungry, we have, like, through the years, we have changed so much. We've changed, like, our format, where we're pulling content from, what kind of content we're pulling. At the first couple of episodes that we had for the show, we were kind of focusing more on, like, kids specific, like how to raise your kids, and we're like, this just doesn't fit for us. Like, this isn't the content that we want to make. So we kind of changed over time, and even changed our format, changed our little bits that we do in between the main topic. We tried some stuff that we really had fun with, but it just wasn't the right fit for the show. Until we found our format, found what we really were good at for the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can take a little while sometimes. I know.
It can take years sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, my previous show, Dudes and Beer, that was 5 years, just over 5 years. It was 350 episodes every Tuesday. And some of those episodes were like 4 or 5 hours long. So it was a ton of content. It's hilarious to me that with zero push anything, Jared, I still smooth get like a good 300-500 listens a month on Dudes and Beer. And I do nothing for it.
Right.
Like it's people find it. I look at my stats and I see the fact that people have gone through and dug through my website and found it, you know, stuff like that. Like, oh my God, this guy's got like a whole another 5 years of content. Like, wow. But
that's a good feeling. It's a good feeling whenever you know that your audience is going through your other shows and your other content.
Yeah.
Because they're in the mindset of having that parasocial relationship with you, that they're like, okay, I really like his content. I'm going to go and find all the content I possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really one that it began out of the concept of a bunch of people sitting around. Maybe we'll disagree this week, but next week we're still going to come back and be friends, and we're going to talk about hard, tough topics. And then we had a guest or two here and there. Then I started traveling. And probably about once a month, I started having a guest on other than connecting to the studio. And as things grew, as we stepped away from the studio and things like that, and people kind of went their separate ways, it metrically evolved into just being me and a guest. And the metrics became better and better and better. And it was really interesting to see that evolution. And that's what led to the rebrand, was like, we're no longer the conglomerate table of people with different opinions, you know, having a topical conversation. We're now a topical conversation with somebody about a topic. And that took a long time to hone and get to that point.
Let me ask you a question.
What's up?
Because you touch on the topic of rebranding, and mm-hmm. I know that you've kind of rebranded your show. How do you feel about the whole process of rebranding your show? Like, for most people, it's going to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to not do the show, and then I'm going to do a new show. What would you suggest for people? Do you think that they should try to keep the audience that they've already built with their show and then rebrand into something else with some heads up, like, hey, this is what this show is turning into? Or do you think that they should just put that show on hiatus and just start fresh from somewhere else and build a different demographic?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with, I mean, once again, a lot of the reason I went through the effort with my audience was because I was just letting them know that my previous show name was Dudes and Beer. It became the fact on social media, literally, Jared, where I could not take out an ad for an episode. I couldn't take out an ad to boost, like, Dudes and Beer is going to be at Comic Palooza, because I had the word beer in my name. It wasn't like Dudes and Michelob.
Right.
Like, I see ads for tequila on my Facebook timeline. How come I can't?
I know.
There was that. Then there was the idea of, most people get the idea of dudes being just a term, but I am kind of leaving half of the world out when I'm saying dudes and not saying dudettes and ladies and
of course
everything else. So there were a few things, and then there were a few guests that were very honest with me that they were very apprehensive with their first appearance. And it was their PR agent who really pushed them and was like, listen, I know the name seems odd, but take a look at the guest list, take a look at the topics of conversation. And I got handled out of a few interviews. Like, as somebody who worked in the halls of radio, I was a producer for a show, and I got the emails for people to be a guest, and there were people that I handled out of interviews. So I know what that email is, and I got it. And it was like, well, you know, maybe it's time for me to have that consideration. And yeah, the real consideration was keeping my audience, not trying to rebuild an audience, because it was the same show. It was the exact same show that we had transformed into. If you were changing topics, if you were turning heels and changing your life politically or religiously, something like that, sure, utterly change everything, stop one community, build another. But I look at it more as using one as a stepping stone to the other, and as many people as you can translate from one to the other, the better.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Building a community is hard. It's very hard.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that most people are going to try to do. If they are changing their content, they are changing their show completely, I think they're going to want to try to hold on to that audience they've already built.
Yeah.
But you have to think, though, that, yes, some of them will move over with you. No matter where you go.
Some of them will leave.
A small percentage. Some of them will leave because it's not going to be the content they're looking
for. Yeah.
So I think that, because I had that mindset early on. Like, if I were to change this, I would just, like, change the logo, change the tagline, change the description, and just use the same audience, and then hopefully everybody stays.
Yeah.
But that's not the best mindset to have, because that's kind of being dishonest to your community, your audience that you've already built. You know, because they're going to leave. most of them are probably going to leave if you just kind of dump it on them. If you slowly and gradually, like you did with your naming of your show, tell them, like, hey, 9 months out, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And then whenever it finally happens, they're not just kind of shocked by it.
Yeah.
Right? But that demographic that you built for this one show that you're doing is not going to be the same for the next show that you're building.
Yeah.
So you really do, even though it's frustrating, I get it, you're really going to want to start building your community fresh.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, even my online community with Curious Realm, formerly Dudes and Beer, like that switched over probably about 3 months before the name change. Everything switched over because it was like, get used to it now, everybody. And we lost some people. We gained some people. We gained a lot of people on social media once that real definition of the content got cleared up by the name change. But it was one of those, the community became a lot more active. One of the big things that I recommend everybody do is not just have a page for your stuff, have a group. Pages are fantastic because they're going to give you metrics beyond belief, as far as social media goes, Facebook, but a group gives you really a nice fly on the wall insight to your community and what's on their mind and what they're thinking.
Those are the diehards. Whoever joins your community, your group, those are going to be your diehards.
And those are the people that you want to try to curate your content for, you know, no different than if, like, I'm not a TikTok user, but that's because most of my demographic is in my age range or older. That just happened.
See, I don't care about that. I just love posting TikTok.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if my audience is there or not. I just enjoy it myself.
Well, so. And you know, it's one of those. I would much rather spend more time on curating my content for YouTube and Facebook, where we get many more
Completely understand.
That's a battle in and of itself. Is how do you learn to conquer each different social media animal? Because once you're on that boat, you got to learn how to drive that boat in that water, you know? Like my wife is amazing on Twitter. I got no clue, man. No, I got no game and no clue on Twitter. Does my stuff post there? Yeah, it posts there automatically from my website. But I don't know how to properly tweet. And how to interact with that community.
That's the thing, though. If you don't know, find somebody who does.
Yeah,
and go that route. Like, obviously, you're doing well enough. You don't need to. But if you really struggle with social media, and you feel like your presence is not a good one, find somebody. Go to Fiverr. You know, just reach out to people who are doing some of this stuff, who are social media content creators and managers, and get their help. Ask some of your friends who can really navigate those social media platforms. If you have a friend of yours that is just like blowing up on TikTok, ask them to help. Offer them a little bit of cash. They'll probably help you out.
Yeah. It really is interesting how communal so much of that is, especially in the podcasting communities. Podcasters are so entirely helpful to each other and willing to, because as we said in our panel in Houston, it's a world sans the gatekeeper. And even the most successful people got there by the most modest of means, typically. I mean, sure, there's the whole concept of time is money. And if you either got the time or the money, you can get there. You know, there's many people that invest a whole lot of commas and zeros to get there really fast and to build an audience.
But then we have the people. That is true. But then we have the people like the godfather of podcasting, Conan O'Brien, that really hasn't put in the dues. He's just a name. You know? And, you know, by all means, this is not ripping Conan O'Brien or his show, because he has always been one of my favorites.
Oh, rip him.
And but whenever the Luminary stuff came out and it was like all about Conan and how he created podcasting, it was kind of frustrating for a little while.
Yeah.
Whenever we have people like Rogan, which I don't listen to Rogan's show. I'm not a huge Rogan fan. I can appreciate Rogan to some extent. But, and then you have like Kevin Smith, who's been doing it so long. And it just seems like the real people who have been there, Jesse Thorne has been in podcast. God knows how long.
Yeah, Adam Carolla.
And that too. It just seems like a slap in the face to the people who really built podcasting.
Yeah.
To come out and be like, oh yeah, this celebrity just got into podcasting because he found out he can make money at it. And now he's just like the best podcaster in the world. Okay, whatever.
Well, and the thing is, though, you bring up a really solid point, Jared, and that is, I think especially since the pandemic, podcasting has exponentially grown, to the tune of millions of podcasts out there now. We are literally talking an ocean of fish. It's no longer a large lake or inland body of water full of fish. It is an ocean full of fish.
It's the abyss is what it is, really.
Yeah. And unfortunately, people see and hear names like Rogan, Conan O'Brien. They see channels on YouTube that pop up and, you know, 10-year-olds are streaming Minecraft and making a comma and zeros every month. It's interesting how fast people get disillusioned. I tell people, if you want a podcast, make sure that you want to make a show and that you just want to make a show. Like, if you want to make money later, fantastic. But that's you're either going to have an incredible niche to start off with, like you said, very drilled down. Like, hey, if you've got a gaming niche, feel free to hop out to your local gaming shops, comic book shops. You might be able to grab up a sponsor real quick, you know? But if you're just a bunch of guys sitting around talking at a table, it's a different world, you know? And hitting the points of monetization on platforms is hard enough, much less hitting the real numbers of click per mil on a website or what a sponsor wants to see.
Right. And see, I think that's what you really have to do in order to get to that point where you are getting sponsors, you are getting some kind of notoriety. I think you really need to start out just making a show for yourself. Make a show where you're doing it for you. And if you have a co-host, you're doing it for the both of you.
Yep.
And the audience will come. They'll gravitate because it's you being your genuine self in front of people. You're kind of putting yourself out there, and people, I think, relate to that because everybody's going to have some similar views on certain things, right? So basically with Hi Hungry, I'm Dad, we started the show because we wanted to do, like I said, early on, it was about kids and raising kids. And we were like, you know what? This isn't for us. This is like just kind of us talking about this stuff. Why don't we change our format and just be us? And we ended up just trying to make each other laugh. And that's all the show is. It's just me and my co-host just trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
And if people enjoy it, they enjoy it.
Yep. Yeah, and people certainly seem to enjoy it there, and that's just it. The beautiful thing about podcasting is that there is a panoply of show and show ideas out there, and it's a beautiful medium where there really aren't any gatekeepers. You can have a podcast about anything, as long as
even
you
if
want.
There's a Right. And even if there is already a podcast about the topic you want to talk about, let's say you want to start a true crime podcast and you're like, oh, well, there's so many true crime podcasts out there. You are correct. There are, but there's not any true crime podcast out there with your voice, your opinion, your thoughts. So yeah. You'll be surprised how many people can be successful, even though there's a million other podcasts out there with the same topic.
Yeah, absolutely. If you were to give two pieces of hard advice to somebody, I guess one to somebody starting a show and one to somebody looking to grow their show, Jared, what would those be?
So starting the show, I would say, of course, get your topic, get your name, whatever breathe work you need to do for the show. But once you actually sit down to record 5 to 10 episodes, thinking that you're going to put them out and just never release them. Because within those 5 to 10 episodes, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn mic etiquette if you've never been on the mic before. You're going to learn your cadence, whatever you're speaking. If you have co-hosts, you're going to learn how to communicate with each other and not really like step on each other's toes a whole lot. And just like what the communication feels like within the context of the show itself. So, I always say minimum of 3, but really 5 to 10 is where you want to be. I know sometimes you're going to just be like, oh no, I just want to release this because I feel like this is so good. And you can definitely do that whenever you hit that point of, okay, this was really good. Like I want to listen to this show. That's when I think you can go ahead and start talking about, okay, I think we're ready. Mm. I think we have the format. We have the relationship with each other. Or I just have the tone of the show if you're a solo. And yeah, I would definitely do that because you can always keep it and you can always release it later on if you really want to. Later on down the road, you're going to be like, man, I'm so happy I didn't release those episodes because they just weren't as good as I thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, I've always been very honest with my stuff. I don't think, I'm right there in the camp with, Todd Cochran when it comes to editing. He's like, I've done thousands of episodes. I don't think I've ever edited a minute. I do some basic audio treatment and I match audio and video and put the two back together, like restitch them. But I don't really do any hard editing or anything like that. I guess it's my coming from the world of live radio and live TV where I'm just used to a casual conversation being on air. So I don't want it highly curated.
Right. And I think it comes down to the show as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Like if you're telling a story, say you have a show about haunted hotel and you really need it to be concise and you have your outline, you have everything you wanted to say, and you just kind of go on a tangent a little bit that has nothing really to do with the show, you're definitely going to want to edit that out. But if you're talking about like a conversation of a show, it's usually better to leave in those little moments that might not be exactly what you want it to be because it's kind of funny in the moment or it might touch on like a heartfelt moment that you didn't expect. So, I can see like conversation wise. If you're not touching those edits, I do typically, but mostly it's trimming down some long pauses or something. My brain doesn't work so well sometimes. And sometimes my brain just kind of clicks off and just stays there for a little too long. So sometimes I'll go through and I'll just take out a little bit of silence, just because it's too much of a pause there.
Yeah.
But, for the most part, I'm not going in. And there are some times where somebody may make a comment that you're like, okay, well, you didn't mean to say that. It's not coming across.
Yeah.
Something that you really want to live out there in the world. So
that's true. I think that there has been one of those throughout my time where something got hidden away in an episode.
Yeah, there's not very many.
Not very many in my world, though. And, you know, I think your advice, especially whenever I've had clients, things like that, that are looking to start shows, the dry run is always my prime example for people. Sit down, hit record, you know, and then go back and listen to it. You know, give it a day or two and go back and listen to it with fresh ears. And
of course. And I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
Is listening to it with fresh ears. Because I know you're going to be excited. You're going to be ready to get it out. You've thought about this for so long, and now you're finally recording, and you just want it to be out in the world. But really, in all honesty, it's very few people can nail it on their first episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I would tend to agree with that.
Unless you're like a trained professional and you know what you're doing and you're coming over from some other media platform to do this new thing called podcasting.
Yeah.
Then typically you're going to need a little bit of time to really understand who you are on the mic, because who I am on the mic, I'm myself, but there is a little bit of extra.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Chris, you and I have hung out a lot. You know, I'm a little bit more refined. I'm usually listening to the conversation more than contributing to the conversation. I'm taking some stuff in. I'm trying to learn where I can, whether it's learning something that I just don't know about or something that I know about that, okay, maybe if I do this a little bit different, then my content will be different. Or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But on the mic, I'm a little bit more outgoing. I'm a little bit more bubbly. I'm a little bit more, I guess, I don't want to say like involved with the conversation, but I'm driving the conversation more.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it, you know, especially, when it comes to hosting, you really do. Your job is to drive the conversation. It's to move the conversation along, and that can be it can be hard sometimes. That can take a little while to hone in yourself, to know when to move something forward and when to keep it going.
Most definitely.
And with that in mind, what is your advice for the veteran?
My advice for the veteran is just don't think you know everything just because you've been doing it for a long time. Mm. Learn where you can. Some of these new people coming into podcasting might have some crazy new concept that you never really thought about before. So don't pigeonhole yourself into the mindset of I'm the smartest guy in the room because I've been doing it this long.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, myself included, I learn something in every panel that I go to. I lean on so many other podcasters in ways to interact with my audience, ways to find new audience, ways to use new social media platforms that I'm not aware of, things like that. Once again, the community when it comes to podcasting is where it's at. And, if you don't involve yourself hip deep in that, I think you were doing yourself a big, big disservice.
Yeah. I mean, also going into another aspect of, you know, this is, I guess, for the veterans, but it's also for the new people coming in. Network.
Yeah.
Talk to people that are in the same niche that you're in. Talk to people who aren't in your niche, but might possibly fit the demographic of who would be there. just network and you know, try to build a relationship between your show and somebody else's show. Not just like a friendship between the hosts, but, you know, also try to reach out and say, hey, we can collaborate and do this thing or the other thing. Like Chris Barnett with Pin Drink Minimum. He was here in Houston for Comic Palooza. He came with our good buddy, Ming Chen. And we've kind of been talking ever since and communicating. And we were both saying, hey, we need to collaborate with something. So eventually, at some point, we're going to have an idea of what to collaborate on, and we're going to do it. So it's keep an open mind. Keep, you know, talk to people. Network. I'm usually pretty much introverted, but whenever it comes to podcasting, I'm out there. I'm talking to people. I'm having a good time. Going out to other people's panels, other people's shows, learning where I can, communicating, talking to people.
Yeah,
having a good time.
That's it, man. That's it. Well, Jared, I want to thank you for your time today, coming in, talking about this. I think it's an important conversation because if it is a content day and age, whether you're talking about it for your business, whatever, creating content and trying to get content out there is an art form in and of itself. And there are so many different strategies, so many different ways to think about it. Thanks for coming in and weighing in with your opinions on the fact.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let everybody know where they can go to keep up with Hi Hungry I'm Dad, where they can go to follow you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, we are pretty much on every pod catching app. We're on Google, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're pretty much everywhere. Primarily, I direct people to Spotify just because that's what I personally use. On social media, you can search at Hi Hungry Podcast. You can search at Atomic Kong on social media if you want to find my personal stuff. Usually, it's kind of set to private. I do have kids.
Yeah.
I don't really want that all out in the world all the time. So, just if you want to connect with me, just send me a message or, you know, try to add me or whatever.
Fantastic. Well, Jared, once again, thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Hold the line real quick while we close things out and we'll chat off air. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Jared McClellan and Hi Hungry I'm Dad, of course, make sure to swing on by Curious Realm, TalkingSoundPodcast.com, TalkingSoundShow.com as well as our sister site. You can find all of the episodes there. You can go to our gear shop and actually buy, you know, all kinds of equipment for the job site, everything else. You can stop on by, check out our videos page and see all of our coverage from events like CES and Texas Association of Broadcasters, as well as interviews with manufacturers and so much more. Thank you so much, everybody, as always, for tuning in. Very much looking forward to this season 9 of Talking Sound. Take care of yourself, and remember, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Talking Sound Podcast. For more episodes, industry news, and information, visit us online at TalkingSoundPodcast.com. Subscribe to the Talking Sound Podcast on Amazon Audible, Spotify, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, or your favorite podcast service. Get the latest Talking Sound videos on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Breach TV, or your Roku or Amazon Fire device with the APR TV app. Talking Sound is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great shows and content, subscribe to HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Until next time, watch those meters, gig safely, and keep reaching for 11.